Welcome to Yacht Crew Vlogs, where we tell the stories of those in the yachting industry. A behind-the-scenes look that discovers the individuals in the industry, their history, their passions, and what inspires them to do what they do. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest, Toby, a sales director for Ocean Independence. And I'm sure everybody out there in the yachting industry has heard of Ocean Independence because you guys are all over the world, aren't you now?
Well, that's very kind. We'd certainly hope so. Yes, 14 different locations on last count. Very, very vibrant office in Fort Lauderdale in the States. Our heart is in Europe and particularly the DACH region, the sort of the German-speaking area of Europe. Busy office in the UK. And then also further afield, where are we? Auckland, Hong Kong. All the places where, you know, we hope you would expect to see, you know, international yacht brokerage company.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You were a traineeship, right? What has taken you from that all the way to sales director at Ocean Independence? I mean, of course, you're also a sailor, aren't you?
I certainly try to whenever possible. Yes, I'm a failed boat builder, really, would be the short answer. I mean, I think probably like many lives, it's being able to be lucky enough to take the opportunities as they come along and present themselves. So yes, while working at this small boatyard restoring wooden boats on the UK south coast, the owner of one of the boats that we were working on unfortunately ran out of money. Again, not an uncommon story there. And so the boat was put up for sale and I met my first yacht broker, the broker that was appointed to sell the yacht. And I started to work for them at weekends, running around with the ladder so that people could climb up and look at the boat stored ashore. And sort of making the tea. I mean, and not quite the rest is history. Yeah, just gradually sold larger and larger yachts and then spent a period of time doing new yacht sales. Then went back working for a boat builder who built sort of steel and aluminium oysters for sailing around the world. And then, yeah, the big lucky break into super yachting was with Cavendish White. Ocean Independence bought Cavendish White, I think about 6 months before the global financial crash. So that's unfortunate timing, but we all lived through it in the same way that we've all now lived through COVID, although it does seem to be on a little bit of a charge again. And so really picking up as much experience along the way. I was lucky enough to be president of MEBA for a short while, which I have to say was an amazing learning experience to all brokers out there, I would say. Join MEBA or join one of the associations. It's great networking and you learn so much out of your own sort of field of expertise. And then, yes, lucky enough to sail the Atlantic twice. Once on a yacht that was older than I was, that was bought by a friend of mine, and the deal was we'd fix it because it had rolled mid-Atlantic, refit it, and then sail across the Atlantic. We had to pump the bilges very quietly every evening when my friend's wife went to sleep, because if she'd known how much water we were taking on board through the rudder stock, she would have been a bit too excited. But the second time was on a much larger and faster yacht, and that was it was also a wonderful experience. Although the reason why I did it the second time was that I've still yet to experience the sort of the blue water sleigh ride downhill crossing properly with trade wind. So yes, I might have to do it a third time. I've just been unlucky with the weather.
Yeah, well, can't really dictate the weather, can you?
No, that's for sure.
I don't know. I don't think we can even dictate what's going to happen tomorrow. So, I mean, good luck with the weather.
Well, I think currently, yeah. I mean, anybody who'd like to put their name forward for the next Prime Minister of the UK, that job's up for grabs. That does seem to be the way of the world for the moment.
One of the good things about the pandemic was it really made people around the world want to get back out there on the water. I think it sort of revived the industry to a certain degree.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it was lovely. It became very apparent during the pandemic, you know, really what all the advantages are of yachting. And luckily for us, really, there's no other sort of kind of recreational facility or industry that you can choose that can match it.
Technology has been coming on for the past, you know, 20, 25 years. And I mean, in my lifetime, the internet was invented. We're not going to talk about how old I am, but the internet was invented.
I do remember the pre-internet days as well, I have to say. I'm right with you.
I remember my father had one of the very first mobile telephones. And when I say mobile, I mean, he was carrying around hand luggage.
Yes. There is a fantastic shot that Mark Cavendish of Heysen has when he's talking about the history of the Heysen shipyard, where he's got these two Arab gentlemen on board the Heysen, basically with a suitcase open on the table with a large aerial coming out of it, and are holding a telephone handset. And it's just the most fantastic photograph. It's extraordinary how the technology has moved on from there. I mean, exactly as you say, Zoom was already there and other facilities, but the thought of this customer's interested in this yacht, he can't get to this yacht at the moment, but I'll tell you what, you know, I'll do a FaceTime walk around of the yacht with the customer, with the captain. We can ask all the questions. We can look at all the spaces. In a way, slightly kicking ourselves probably that we'd never thought of that before. No longer do we have to sit and wait. It has made yachting, you know, I think also so much more real as well. Real, accessible, just to be able to have these quick connections and to be able to work with people, particularly our customers, when they have the time. Technology has enabled us to do that. It's also brought our company closer together. It's improved our ability to be able to provide service to our customers, but it's also improved the service overall that we're able to provide.
One thing that the entire industry was really on about was yacht shows were integral to the entire yachting experience. I mean, when it came to sales, when it came to networking, et cetera, et cetera. Have you found, for you as a company, you are finding other ways to interact with your ultra high net worth individual clients? Is there a better way?
Yacht shows for our company and for company like ours do not deliver return on investment. Not even close. They never ever have, and they probably never ever will. But because everybody else did them, and you've got to keep up with the Joneses, it meant that everybody else had to do them. We were on this unquestioning treadmill, and the pandemic gave us cause to break this mold for a moment. And we proved that, okay, well, we don't need yacht shows to necessarily sell individual yachts. Now, I think everybody has taken that on board. What everybody else also realizes is exactly as you say, to act as a showcase to the industry and to encourage new people into the industry. Yes, I mean, you know, we need yacht shows as a showcase. And so the question is okay, in that case, okay, who is going to pay for it, or how is it going to be paid for? And, you know, do we need so many of them? We have seemingly sleptwalked back into almost the old cycle. Again, not enough effort has been made to really have a proper conversation about what are these events meant to do. And I appreciate also it's difficult for the, you know, the people that make their money from organizing these exhibitions. It's a massive industry. We pay for it, or at least we pay for our chunk of it. And certainly our owners and our clients do. And what do they get in return? Oh, it's really difficult. And so, you know, we're back to smoke and mirrors, and we're back to the industry not being very honest with our client on this. It would be great to break the mold. Unfortunately, I think that, you know, we're a competitive industry as well. And we are not very good at sticking together, and we're not good at having industry meetings and saying, okay, we've all agreed to do this. And then you leave the meeting, and then you know that at least two of your competitors are on the phone saying, oh, guess what? They've all agreed to do this, but I think we should do exactly the opposite. And there we go. But, you know, I mean, that's life. We'll see the Cannes and Monaco yacht shows, I'm sure, this year, and Fort Lauderdale, of course, back in full swing. I think that there's going to be challenges to really fill the berth spaces. There's a lack of product on the brokerage market. There's probably been one or two Russian yachts in boat shows in the past, and, you know, will they be there? Are they going to be welcomed? How is that going to be? Is also a little bit of an unknown as well. So it's going to be, yet again, it's going to be a very different September season. The sales and purchase market has slowed considerably, and I think it will be reflected in the yacht shows. So whether we get another opportunity to sit down and talk to the exhibition organizers and say, look, guys, we really do need to restructure this.
There is this huge microscope on the super yacht industry from around the world because of the situation between Russia and Ukraine. Is that going to continue?
I think this would have happened naturally anyway, simply because of market forces. The overriding factor is the market has just about run out of product.
What about the charter market? Are you seeing like significant changes? We have this whole generation of Airbnbers coming out. Do you think the charter market is going to grow over the next 5 years?
We are seeing a dramatic increase in the number of people chartering yachts. Is that driven by exactly what you say and the fact that we're going to run out of owners? Well, the current state of the sales and purchase market would suggest not. And so I think, thankfully, we're always going to have these sort of two very different groups of people.
What is the most popular charter boat size at this stage in time?
There's always that sweet spot between 35 to sort of 45 meters, under 500 gross ton.
And where is the most favored location? And have you noticed a change from pre-pandemic till now?
Post-pandemic, the Americans were chartering, but they weren't coming to Europe. It's still without doubt the Western Mediterranean remains the most popular place. Our greatest challenge today is, if we come back to your comment about the microscope, is that every bank transfer that is being sent just about anywhere is now, you know, compliance is at the top of everybody's list, and quite rightly so. But certainly, to, you know, just to talk briefly about our sort of the third pillar of ocean independence, which is operational yacht management, they really have, particularly since the pandemic, again, if we talk about the way that the market has changed, they've really proved their worth. I think shore-based operational yacht support, shore-based operational yacht management have really proved the added value that they can give. There's a 40% increase in bank transfers being stopped by the algorithms that detect when something might be up. The money is then washed away into a side account whilst it's then manually checked for compliance issues. That's then a challenge because, you know, the money has to be kept moving.
You know, there's so many circles that you have to go through in order to actually take it back to where, you know, the ownership is. And the money's the same way because it's filtered through. And, you know, sometimes it's entirely legitimate, for sure.
No, but it just gives you really have. I mean, even now, the owning company has to have a bank account. The KYC has to be in place for the bank account. I mean, everything has to be sort of, you know, compliance checked, yes, audited and correctly organized. And if it's not, you know, you're going to run into trouble. It's great to see this sort of this little spoken about, but hugely important area of the super yacht industry, the operational yacht management side, sort of, you know, coming to the fore. Sometimes you're asked, well, you know, what exactly do I get for yacht management? It's fantastic to, you know, be able to, you know, actually you get all of this. Isn't it great? It's all part of that package that as an industry we've got to pull it together in order to keep yachting, you know, as easy and as carefree and as smooth and just that great experience that we all know that it is, so we can carry on not only enjoying our livelihoods but enjoying working in this. It's just such a great industry to work in.
What's next in the next, say, 5 years for yourself and ocean independence?
We've been really debating internally the future of yachting. We've got a couple of internal projects underway, sustainable focused. The industry has got to tackle this a little bit more head on that it's doing at the moment. I mean, everything.
Well, there's a lot of hashtags.
I guarantee you, you know, if you go and walk on board a yacht, and they, of course, the crew will be wonderful, and they'll ask you if you'd like something to drink, and you'd say, "I'd love a water, please." I would say there's an 80% chance that they'll hand you a plastic bottle.
Yep.
If we can't just crack that nut, I mean, come on. If we can't crack, you know, that one simple problem with the plastic bottles, then what can we do? We've got a little bit of an internal sort of back to basics program that we're looking to roll out. I think all customers should be offered eco charter options where, you know, there's no single use plastic on board. There's everything is locally sourced. We look at the carbon footprint of the whole charter, not just the fuel. We've got another project underway at the moment looking at the sort of the future structure of actual ownership. If what is sort of largely predicted, which is, yes, you know, the future younger users of today are not going to want to own, somebody still has to own.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there'll be nothing to charter. And we've got a project that hopefully is underway to sort of address and look at that. I can't say too much more because
you'll be giving away the game.
Well, no, no, no. I mean, they're not finished. But we're close on both counts. And our mind is very firmly set on how we can be a business for the future of yachting. If there's a slight frustration with the industry, is we also need to look at the deal, you know, that we could be doing in a year's time or 2 years' time as well. And how will that be? It's hard to do, I have to say, because, you know, we're not massive multinational companies. You know, we don't have a research and development department. It's challenging for us all to be able to carve out of our day enough time to sit down and go, okay, well, you know, I appreciate we've got all of the, you know, the challenges of running the business today with us, but we've got to sit down and look at what the future challenges will be. But no, I'm always excited by the future, but I have to say particularly excited at the moment.
That is one of the things that I have noticed with the yachting industry, is that it almost seems happy with the status quo. If you're not looking where your potential client is 5 years down the road, you're not going to have clients in that time frame.
It's a combination of two things, really. I mean, I think when I was leaving school, I mean, this industry didn't really exist.
Yeah.
So if you look how far the industry has come, how quickly, then, you know, we shouldn't be too hard on ourselves, but in the same breath, we must not be complacent either. And I think sometimes we're a little bit guilty of that. Maybe we come back to the, you know, that huge point about the industry sticking to joint decisions, the industry sort of like deciding what's right for itself, and not being so fragmented, and you know, for a way, you know, is standing up a little bit to sort of, in this particular case, the event organizers, and saying, you know, no, we don't believe that this is the way forward for the industry, and we're all going to stick together and do it. We've got to sort of carry that thinking across to other areas as well, and that's where I think there's a bit more growing up to do.
So in a perfect yachting utopia.
In a perfect yachting utopia, it wouldn't look a million miles away from where it does today. I think it's a question of tweaking and improving rather than throwing everything away and starting again. And we have to look at what we accomplished today. We do accomplish providing the most amazing experiences to our customers. We do deliver it today. We need to tweak it. We need to make sure that it's relevant for the future. And how do we continue, you know, providing that for the future? And all of us have to take that sort of next step in terms of professionalism and being a bigger industry and supporting all of the parts of the industry. Are this huge team, you know, the crew, operational yacht managers, the brokers, the shipyards, and quite often, you know, there's a little bit of agitation between us, and I think that actually lets the customer down and doesn't do the industry any good. What we can achieve when we all work together is extraordinary. That's what we should focus on going forwards.
Great big thank you, Toby, for taking the time today to talk to us.
It's great to talk about these things, and it's a debate that needs to continue. So thank you very much indeed.
You've been listening to the sales director of Ocean Independence. We thank him for his time. My name is Rhea Rao. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.